Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, a great nation, despite the fact that we have a great and rising and increasingly serious problem with crime. A lot of it is violent crime, but there are also devastating property crimes with criminal gangs, not your old-fashioned gangs, new gangs organized in such a way that they can rip off retail establishments and damage a business community that is struggling to come back from the pandemic. There's a piece about that in the New York Times by Peter Coy, who has joined us before. He's an outstanding writer about economics from a very objective, it seems to me, and responsible point of view. Before joining the New York Times in July of 2021, Peter Coy spent nearly 32 years writing for Business Week and its successor, Bloomberg Business Week. Peter, what you're talking about is something that is... Oh, I am sorry. We don't have Peter yet. But what we do have to finish is more emails that came in. And the pollster, Brian Stryker, and his warning to Democrats about their perception problem. And what's fascinating to me is he writes about a perception problem that they're more concerned with social issues. He doesn't specify what the social issues are. But it's very clear from the context of what he's writing about is the social issues that he's talking about are particularly immigration, Black Lives Matter, issues of critical race theory, issues of voting rights and voting suppression for people of color, issues that are directly aimed at crucial parts of the Democratic base, which is a base that is basically motivated by a sense of aggrievement, which means that when your party is in power and things aren't going well and people have been trained basically politically and ideologically to feel for years that they have been victimized and they are being treated unfairly, you've got a huge problem. And one of the ideas that he is asked about is how do Democrats balance a commitment to core constituencies while at the same time addressing economic issues that voters are confronting every day? And then Brian Stryker, and this is after assembling a series of focus groups with a series of other Democratic and centrist pollsters, he says that how do you get people to confront the voters with their concern for issues that voters themselves are confronting every day. He says the number one issue for women right now isn't women, it's the economy. And the number one issue for Black voters is the economy. And the number one issue for Latino voters is the economy. He says, I'm not arguing for anybody to ignore social issues, but when we think broadly about voters, they actually all want us talking about the economy and doing things to help them out economically. And then the question, so what can Democrats do going into the midterms? A big part of the problem was that people didn't feel that they knew enough about Terry McAuliffe. He's talking about the Virginia disaster for Democrats and what he had done. Governors in particular during COVID were on TV all the time talking to the people about COVID. That went well. So it's all anybody knows of what they've done. So you need to tell your story about what you've been doing to the press and in paid communications outside of COVID. And what applies to members of the Congress, state legislatures, and everyone on down is that same imperative. And then he says, is there any silver lining to be found for Democrats? And he says this, if the country is in a better place next year, we're likely to be rewarded for that. Voters are responding to real-world frustrations, but this isn't some manufactured narrative. And... That, it seems to me, is a fascinating perspective from the other side. One of the things that the Democrats have going for them is the fact that on the Republican side of things, there's a fair amount of craziness that we aren't clear enough in dissociating ourselves from. The front page of the Seattle Times had a picture of a gentleman standing inside a lighted circle, which spelled out Q, and he's wearing an American flag around his neck. And the headline is, Dallas Vigil, Awaiting JFK Jr.'s Resurrection, a Trump Return, led by Federal Way Man. And it points out the main thing leading them, Michael Protzman says, is a longtime demolition contractor from Federal Way, that's who he is, who, according to court records and interviews, slipped down a rabbit hole of conspiracy theories in recent years and is now leading what one QAnon expert described as a cult that may be taking a sinister turn. There's evidence that there have been hundreds of thousands of dollars that have been siphoned into this particular cult, which is right now assembled next to Dealey Plaza in Dallas. And there are hundreds of people, not thousands. But this is audio of what that group, led by Michael Protzman of Federal Way Washington, what that group sounds like in terms of its point of view. Listen, clip one.
It is almost 12:29. Any minute now, the big reveal. The crowd is big, ready to go.
Okay, and here's a one of the participants in this quasi-rally awaiting the resurrection of JFK Jr. He crashed his plane in 1999. But here's somebody in that Dallas meeting taking a video, waiting for the great events. Listen. Yeah, clip two. Clip, which shows people a month later. This was after, it can't be a month later, because there's still people at the plaza. They were expecting JFK Jr. to come back on the anniversary of his father's assassination. But here's a later date where they're still waiting for JFK to come back from the dead. Listen. Oh, okay, sorry, those clips are not there. In any event, what is there is the Seattle, in Dallas, his group's antics near the site of President John F. Kennedy's assassination in 1963 have attracted international attention and social media fascination. Protzman, who's the leader of this group, has been seen wearing a tinfoil hat at times and giving bizarre speeches in which he recites a strings of numbers, translating words into numeric values that he claims predict the future or reveal hidden knowledge. And he said this. This is brilliant. I am QAnon King 174. Yes, I am. Coming home 174. Yes, John Kennedy 174. Yes, I am Jesus Christ 174. Yes, John Kennedy, 174. He shouted to rapt followers in Dallas during a rant in early November that was posted on YouTube. Fascinating. One man listening appeared to pass out during the speech. It's not the only weirdness going on. There's also a great mobilization of organized theft. Called Crashingle Bells for You can be considering a gift subscription as a MedHead Plus member. By the way, for the subscriber, it costs a person subscribing all of 22 cents. That's 22 cents a day. That's for 24/7 access to this show in commercials-free versions and to all of the material streaming live at the History Store. Check it out at medvedhistorystore.com. Peter Coy, who I was introducing before, should be better known because he's a brilliant and very valuable writer on the economy. Now with the New York Times, after years writing for Business Week, and he writes this week about maybe some glimpse of hope about this devastating pandemic of not COVID-19, but of something kind of more viscerally horrifying, which is retail theft. That's these gangs of people who break into stores, sometimes very violently, sometimes assaulting store employees or even customers, and come out with millions and millions of dollars in merchandise. And Peter, I appreciate your coming on. His piece is called "Retail Theft Has Gotten Very Organized." Is there any estimate about how much this costs retail establishments every year, this kind of crime where people are stealing stuff to resell?
I think it's potentially in the billions if you include all types. That would be not just the break-ins, but also various kinds of stealing from warehouses, for example, breaking. And then there's ordinary shoplifting, kind of on an individual level, but it adds up. It turns out to be big numbers, and you know, it hits people in many ways. One is just this fear. What happens if I'm in a store someday and suddenly a gang bursts in? That's pretty frightening. Of course, it's bad for the vendors because they lose money, and it can even be bad for the customers having to pay more if the vendors respond by raising their prices to, you know, cover their profit margins.
Well, sure. I mean, it obviously can be a feeding factor for inflation. But you, in your piece, you mention that Congress is actually doing something that may be helpful in this regard. What is it?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's nice when I can report some good news. there was a bill earlier this year sponsored by Senator Dick Durbin, Democrat of Illinois, and Bill Cassidy, Republican of Louisiana, called the Informed Consumers Act. It wasn't really getting anywhere, though, because a lot of sort of online people were opposed to it. But then Janice Schakowsky, who's a Democrat in the House from Illinois, and Gus Bilirakis, who's a Republican in the House from Florida, got together with their own House version of the bill, which managed to make some compromises that managed to get the online people on board. And so the bill passed their House Energy and Commerce Committee, and now it's going to the floor of the House, actually has a chance of passage.
And what it would do is... Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, what it would do essentially is it would cut the profit out of this, because right now people steal because they can resell the stuff online. If they can't resell the stuff online, they won't have that incentive to steal it in the first place. So the way the bill works is it says, look, you have to disclose your identity. You have to verify your identity, providing all kinds of documentation. So if you're a criminal, you're not going to want to do that. So it's the idea is you take the profit motive out of organized retail crime.
Okay, which is a great idea, because it's one of those things a lot of people believe just viscerally. Well, when people turn to theft, when they turn to stealing, it's because they're hungry, it's because they're
right.
broke, it's because they
right.
need food for their kids, whatever. And it's not that. If you could take a look at some of these videos, particularly from San Francisco,
yeah.
they're stealing luxury goods that
right.
clearly are intended for resale. And
exactly.
speaking of resale, I want to ask you your perspective on the economic numbers today. President Biden was trumpeting the fact that the unemployment is down. There are more people in the workforce now, not less. And is this really happy days are here again, or are these numbers disappointing?
This was a mixed jobs report, kind of confusing, actually, because the two key numbers that people pay attention to are pointing in different directions. The one you hear a lot about is the payroll increase, and that came in low, only 210,000 jobs net created in November versus expectation of more than 500,000. So that was bad news. On the other hand, as Biden pointed out, the unemployment rate did go down a lot. So this, the reason it's confusing is there are two different surveys, completely independent of each other, that go into the report. The payroll survey is they talk to employers, whereas the report that produces the unemployment numbers is talking to households. And in this case, the household number was more positive. It's showing the decline in the unemployment rate to 4.2%, which is, you know, pretty far down there. So we'll have to see in coming months which number is the real one.
Are we likely to have, do you believe, and you follow this as closely as anyone, that we are going to have a very merry Christmas economically?
Well, retail sales have been pretty strong. You know, consumers are in reasonably good shape. I mean, you have to put this against the background that we're actually still in a pandemic. I don't think there are very many people who would have thought if a pandemic was still raging in this country, which it is, unfortunately, that the economy would be actually as robust as it is. So it's all a matter of perspective. It could be better, but actually retail sales have been reasonably strong.
Well, again, that certainly can be encouraging news for the entire country and for the entire economy. And basically, when do people begin to feel reassured about inflation?
Inflation remains a big problem.
And the problem that appears to be getting worse, at least for the time being. We come back, more on the variety of controversies on the table. Coming up on The MedVet Show.
1-800-955-1776.
On the Michael Medved Show, 1-800-955-1776, if you want to talk about vaccine mandates. Frankly, I'm glad not to talk about vaccine mandates today. You know why? Because yesterday it looked like there were a number of members of Congress who were just flat out heading for a suicidal stand in which they would block this bill to continue the government operating. We were looking at a potential government shutdown tonight. And they fortunately, Republicans and Democrats cooperated at least enough to allow the spending bill to go through in a timely manner, to allow a vote on the spending bill. So we're going to be operating, I think it's till the end of February. And now why they do it little bit by little bit, remember they did it here until the beginning of December. Now they're moving forward to February. Maybe sometime soon they can get the entire thing arranged. But the idea had been that unless a vote was allowed on a bill condemning President Biden's vaccine mandate policy, that a number of Republicans and were claiming they would make sure the government shut down. And that would be extremely unpopular. Government shutdowns are always unpopular. Why? Because they're pointless and stupid, and they never get you what you want. There hasn't been one ever that has been even vaguely successful. And they almost always hurt the person who is perceived as responsible for the shutdown. And aside from which, it is true that vaccine mandates are less popular slightly than they were, but a majority of Americans are vaccinated, and there's continues to be majority support for mandates. And to make that an issue going into the midterm elections when Republicans have so much else working for us, that it seems to me it's a very good thing that we escaped the danger of having to defend shutting down the government. And the point that I think needs to be made about all of this is that however you feel about vaccines, people have different opinions, they have different reactions. My wife just got her booster, and she did have a couple of hours, about a half a day, of discomfort, as she did previously with the Moderna vaccine. But she's feeling fine. And basically, the idea that people are suffering from the vaccines, that's the basic point that I think is problematic, is when people are trying so hard to discourage vaccines, why? Now, it may not be the ultimate result, the ultimate cure for the entire pandemic and for the new Omicron variant. It may not be the full answer, okay? Possibly. But it can't hurt. In other words, what possible good are you doing to dismantle? What good for other people to dismantle some of the structures that have always been put in place to try to allow people to make progress in reducing the transmission? One of the emails that I got came in from John in California, and he says, I can't listen to every hour of every day, but I'm still mystified as to the continuing worry about the unvaccinated spreading the virus. It seems like there is clear evidence from better vaccinated countries than us that the vaccinated spread COVID as much as the unvaccinated. Is this a misunderstanding of the results from these well-vaccinated places? Is this just plain misinformation? Yes, the vaccines protect the vaccinated from the worst effects. And yes, it should keep our hospitals from getting crowded. But are the unvaccinated any kind of danger to those around them? Well, yes. To answer your question, and it's a well-put question, is this a misunderstanding? It's a misunderstanding of the results. The results that you're talking about, and I look that up, have to do with countries in which overwhelming numbers of people are vaccinated, as you pointed out. And of those overwhelming numbers of people who are vaccinated, there are breakthrough occasions. And the reason that it's a misunderstanding is because the fact is that if you are unvaccinated, you're vastly more likely to actually have and to get COVID. You cannot transmit COVID unless you're carrying the virus. And the whole idea of the vaccinated who get breakthrough cases is that's a very big minority of a very small minority of a very big majority. In other words, it's obvious that there will be cases of vaccinated people who have gotten sick despite the vaccinations. And yes, the vaccinations are supposed to make the incidence of the sickness far less serious. But the idea that unvaccinated people are a danger to people around them, they're a danger because they're far more likely to get the virus, to get the disease. And this is why people are concerned about it. Because would you want to invite into a social gathering in your home where you have a whole bunch of people and the great majority are vaccinated. Inviting in someone who is unvaccinated is a it's not taking a deadly chance, and it doesn't mean that that person should be banned forever. But what it does mean is that you have a much bigger chance of having someone coming in who's sick and can spread it. Then this came in from Jack in Washington, and he says, we both know that the Jewish media wants there to be special privileges and preferential hiring of blacks with the intention of creating racial hostility. And by the way, I'm just going to use the word blacks. He actually uses another word that starts with N, which I think indicates the level of his sophistication. If anything, the Jewish media needs to stop this problem. And as you know, the majority of slave owners back in the 1800s were Jewish, which actually is, of course, preposterous, and it's wrong. The percentage of Jewish people in the United States in the time of slavery was far less than 1%. It was less than half of 1%, because the big immigration of Jewish people to the U.S. came after 1881. You can read about it in God's Hand on America. In any event, he goes on. He says, as we know, the majority of slave owners back in the 1800s were Jewish, and Jewish people are always quick to condemn white people for being slave owners. Talk about hypocrisy. Jack in Washington. Jack, the idea that, and he begins, he says that I endorse hiring quotas for black people. I don't endorse quotas of any kind. And by the way, Jewish people were the victims of quotas through the 1950s in university admissions, in hiring in firms, in all kinds of prominent positions. But that's a history that Jack may not acknowledge. We will be right back on the Medved Show with The Power of the Dog and a pretty wonderful movie about cooking. It's called Julia, coming up on the Medved Show.
I've had several knee injuries on my left knee, and so over time, stiffness set in with a great deal of pain. So I went ahead and ordered the starter packet, and after about 2 weeks, I started noticing results. And after they were gone and I reordered, let's say 6 weeks in, my pain was virtually gone. But the big bonus was that the stiffness was...
And this is a very special Sabbath for Jewish people around the world, because it's the one and only, once a year, Shabbat Hanukkah. It is the Sabbath that occurs in the middle of the eight-day holiday of Hanukkah. It's actually the sixth night of Hanukkah coming up tonight, very shortly, actually. One of the interesting things, you have to light candles for Shabbat, and you have to light candles for Hanukkah. You have to light the Hanukkah candles first, and larger candles or larger cruses of oil, if you use that for your Hanukkah lights, you have to do that before the Shabbat candles so that the Hanukkah candles last into the Sabbath, because you wouldn't be lighting the candles after you light the Sabbath candles going into 25 hours, and it is 25 hours, not 24, that's not a mistake, of cessation of creative human activity. Now, some creative human activity is highly worthwhile, and you get that sometimes even from Hollyweird. Okay, there is one movie first that I want to pay a little attention to, because it's one of those films that I can't play you any clips from it, aside from the subject matter and the nature of the movie. It's in French, and subtitles are provided, but playing movies in foreign languages on air doesn't really work. It's also a very questionable movie from a very famous director. Paul Verhoeven directed Basic Instinct. He directed RoboCop. He directed Total Recall. He has made a lot of movies that have been fairly successful. He also made one of the worst movies of all time, and there's a consensus on this. It's called Showgirls. And this is, if you can imagine taking Showgirls, and there really are similarities, and moving it into the 1600s at a convent with a young nun. Well, that's kind of what Benedetta is. It's actually based on a historical character. I'd never heard of this person before, but Benedetta Carolini was a nun. She was a lesbian, and we know that she began preaching very publicly, and she had visions. She had all kinds of prophecies that she was delivering. She was very controversial. So I guess it's appropriate that the movie would be controversial, but the movie's unwatchable. It's awful. And basically, part of what ruins it is just vicious anti-Catholic propaganda. It takes all of the extremely slanderous stuff that people have been saying about the Catholic Church, who hate Catholicism, for hundreds of years, and sort of recycles it and imposes it onto this story from, as I mentioned, the early 1600s. They think that Benedetta Carolini was born in 1595. But in any event, she was in Italy, and the film is incredibly brutal. And it is incredibly graphic in its sex scenes, some of it graphic like pornography, except not the kind of pornography that would, I think, provide any excitement or just disgust. It's meant to be disturbing, the film, but it doesn't succeed in that. It reaches disgusting. Some of the camera work is well done, and some of the sets are okay, though they do look like they're scrimping for money on this French production. But Paul Verhoeven's Benedetta is the name of the film. It's not rated, but it should be and would be rated NC-17 if it were. 1.5 stars. The movie is a must-miss. Really, it is. A much different movie is called Julia. It's a PG-13, by the way, and it's a beautiful movie about a dual love story. It's a love story about a young woman who is deeply in love with her husband, and the story of their relationship is extraordinarily touching. It's a true story because she's also deeply in love with food and cooking. The film is about a documentary, the great celebrity chef Julia Child, who died in 1989. Listen.
Julia had these kind of romantic dreams for what her life might be. She was really pining for adventure.
She never looked back.
As soon as I got into France and realized what it was all about, one taste of that food and I never got over it. I decided that I would enroll in the Cordon Bleu.
Cooking was a world of men.
I'm Julia Child. Welcome to the French Chef.
She changed everything.
Oh, well, she did, and the film is fascinating in that account, and it has lavish, extremely sensual photography showing the process of cooking and food. And Julia Child was easily parodied, but she was a force of nature, and she kept going with her love of cooking and her love for her husband, Paul, who comes across also as a fascinating guy. And it's one of those things, if you don't tear up at certain points in this film, you're not paying attention. It's beautifully shot and done with the collaboration of the Julia Child Foundation. And again, for me, I'm not a big foodie. I mean, I enjoy eating and everything, but the idea of the fascination with cooking has always struck me as kind of silly, but not here. It does present the idea of cooking as an art form. For Julia, PG-13, 4 stars. It's playing in theaters around the country. Another film on Netflix has gotten tremendous Oscar attention. It's from Jane Campion, who did The Piano years ago. The New Zealand director is back with a strange Western taking place in the wilds of Montana high desert, really, though it's actually shot in New Zealand. And Benedict Cumberbatch plays a bitter, angry, sadistic cowboy who's running an extensive ranch that he has been given along with his brother from his parents, who are known as the old gent and the old lady. The film then gets going when his brother, played by Jesse Plemons, gets married to Kirsten Dunst, and she comes along with a rather fey young man who enters this remote and difficult world. Listen.
25 years since our first run together. 1900 and nothing.
It's a long time.
What you doing?
Getting mixed up with her.
A man's made by patience and the odds against him.
For what kind of man would I be if I did not help my mother?
Peter!
If I did not save her.
Sort of a lonesome place out here, Pete. Unless you get in the swing of things.
The film is haunting. It is beautifully shot. I mean, really, the photography and the editing and just the way the whole film is put together is gorgeous to look at, but it's deeply confusing. The title, by the way, The Power of the Dog, is from Psalms. It's a biblical title. But there's nothing particularly biblical about the film. The fact is that Phil, this angry and bitter cowboy who looks like he's ready to explode in violence at any moment, and there's a certain amount of disturbing violence and cruelty in the film. There's what people call a castration scene. Well, it's a castration of a cow, not of a human being, so take it easy on that. But the film is one of those things of, after you've been hypnotized by the gorgeousness and the skill of the entire thing, you have to ask yourself, what did I just watch? And what is the big secret that basically I think any sensitive viewer could see coming a long way away? This is based on a novel, which is also has a lot of questions with it. 2.5 stars for The Power of the Dog. I know that there are many who believe this is one of the very finest films of the year. I've got to say, I'm not among them. It's a dubious entertainment experience. Lots of other dubious experiences in Washington, in New York, around the world. We will cover them all, including a prediction that humans are going extinct. They are. Well, not before Monday, when we'll continue in This Greatest Nation on God's Green Earth.